Welcome to the teaching ministry of North Coast Church at Vista, California. We invite you to please open your Bibles as we join Pastor Chris Brown for today's message.
It amazes me when you look for it, how saturated our culture is with depictions of Jesus. From our musicians, Christian or secular, to our songwriters, to our artists, to our advertising, to our social satire, to our animation, to our Legos, to internet that has brought everything at a click of a button. It is amazing how many people, in their own way, by their own agenda, try to get across this Jesus or use him for some purpose or means or to speak against them. And so this series, as hard as it is to try to set aside what we want from this man, and really go back and look at what he wanted from us. Who was he? What was he about? And what did he do? We've got this bias in society. On one side, they have this passive gentleman that treated everybody nice, and that was Jesus. And he skipped with a halo and just loved. And to the far extreme, this bent from those that are seeking him to find this Rambo renegade Jesus, who just came into town guns blazing and just all yoked up. And in between there somewhere, I find I'm not happy at either extreme. And as much as I want Jesus to be my Jesus, we simply entitled it Jesus the Wild Man, ? A picture of the type of followers, maybe in our cultural, but a picture of the type of followers that followed him and still today. And to set aside our own bias, our own rituals, and just get back and look at who was he and what was he about, regardless of what we heard or what we want or our desire is. And so if you missed last week, you missed an intro to it. If you missed last week, you missed two chapters in the book of Mark. And if you haven't turned there yet, go ahead and open your Bible. Mark chapter 2, we're picking up at verse 23. But if you missed it, here it goes in 30 seconds. John shows up and said, the Messiah is about to come. You're going to have to leave your old lifestyle and find a totally new one. Ta-da! Jesus shows up and he gets baptized. Voice comes down from heaven, something like a dove, not a dove, says, this is my son, whom I love. I am well pleased. And everybody's all, ah! And that's him. He immediately walks beside the seashore. He must have taught a little bit. People have to have some recognition, but he sees James and John, they're running a fishing business in their father's boats, and he simply says, follow me. And these two dock workers get up and they follow him and they leave everything. He goes into church, and the first time in church, there's a demon-possessed man that starts screaming, what do you want from me? And everyone's freaked out. Everyone starts climbing over pews and trying to hop over the organ and get out the stained glass windows because you know it's a scene. And there Jesus just, not intimidated, unflinching, just says, be quiet and come out. And the man convulsed, shrieks, a spirit flies out, and the man collapses. And everyone's like, we've never seen anything like this in church before, you think? He goes to Simon Peter's mother-in-law. She's sick with the fever. These hands and this voice that just cast out a demon now have this incredible compassion, and they heal her beside the bed. And now the entire town has known these stories. Everybody that was in a church went home and said, you shouldn't have watched the game today. You should have been there. Here's what happened. And everyone starts bringing the sick and those that are blind and those that are crippled and those that have leprosy and those that are demon-possessed. And all night long, he heals these people. Very early in the morning, he gets up and tells the disciples, let's go somewhere else. I've made my mark here, but now people are just coming to get what they want. It's time to go. And on the way, they meet a man with leprosy that says, if you're willing, I know you can do this. And Jesus goes, oh, yeah, I'm willing. And he heals him. Brings us to the beginning of chapter 2. He shows up at a home. So many people gather. Don't look down. We're just recapping. That they cut a hole in the roof. We're not ready to read yet. Come on. They cut a hole in the roof. They drop a paralyzed guy. Jesus said, your sins are forgiven. Everybody's like, oh. Nobody can forgive sins except for God alone. And even to say you can is blasphemy, and that penalty is death. And Jesus goes, just so you know I can do that, let me show you I can do this. And he told the paralyzed man, pick up your mat and walk. And the man who had never been able to move now picks up his mat and he walks out. And everybody again is amazed. Now that he says, I've shown you I have power over all things supernatural, I have power over all things spiritual, and I have power over all things physical. Now that I've shown you that heaven itself claims that I am the Son, let me show you the program. And he goes and hangs out with the pimps and drug dealers at Levi's house. And everybody's blown away. How in the world can you hang out, remember eating dinner with his fellowship in that day and age with those people? And Jesus says, this is why I've come. For those that understand, they need help and change. That's why I'm here. And just when they don't get it, he then flips a switch and says, you're never going to get it. Let me tell you about new wine and old wineskin and a new patch on old cloth. Two stories that we read last week were basically said, I will not fit your system. I will never fit your structure. And if you're not willing to change, it's not going to happen with me. Don't get a Jesus patch for your life. It's not going to stop the leaks. And we're only at the end of chapter 2. I like this guy. I don't care what he looked like. I don't care what he looked like. It's what he did, and here we go. Now that all that's buzzing in their ears, now that they realize he has showed up with power they've never seen, a compassion they've never seen, and now he's doing a whole new system, we have this. Mark 2:23. Before we do that, for those of you that missed last week, let me give you two quick fill-in-the-blanks, just so you're part of it. I pretend like I meant to do it that way. I called it last week's winners. Don't know why, because it's bracketology time. But last week's winners, this, Jesus only helps those who need a doctor. Just to recap, because our minds have to be, remember, Mark writes this through the Spirit, realizing in context, what is he doing? There's no chapters and verses. Mark didn't go, I'm getting tired. I should end a chapter and start chapter 3 tomorrow. This was a letter saying you've got to read this in its entirety. If you've never sat down and taking 3 hours, if you read like me, 5 hours, and read the book of Mark and just realized this was a story. This was his life, not verses to memorize in Sunday school. I'm glad they make kids do that to get in their head, but it wasn't verses to memorize. So to remember and put it all together, because we've broken it up by 7 days, that Jesus only helps those who need a doctor. And he said, if you're not coming, realizing you need God to change you, then I'm not going to work. And if you're here today doing church and you don't have something in you that knows, God, I need you to constantly work in my life. He says, I won't work. He said it there last week and in this last passage. I have come to help those that are sick, not those that are healthy or those that are righteous. If you want religion to make you feel good about yourself, he said, you can have it. But Jesus says, don't include me in it. Another way of putting it is this, number two, that Jesus did not come to bless my life, but to change it. People, I know that one hurts. This is why I got to go back to the Bible Jesus, not my Jesus. Because my Jesus sits on my shoulder with a little wand, and as soon as something gets her up, and as soon as I need help, and this Jesus is here to bless my life. And when my life isn't being blessed, I'm mad. Not at me for making dumb mistakes. I'm mad at Jesus for not fixing all my dumb mistakes. And that's Western civilization Christianity. People, remember the symbol for Christianity is a cross, not a recliner. Okay? You get that? That's why they killed him. That's why the Jews still today say he's not the Messiah. You do not have a suffering Jesus. You do not have a Jesus that gets the snot beat out of him and lets a foreign government nail him to a tree. That's not a Messiah, folks. And you do not want to follow that guy who's rejected by his own friends, his family, his townspeople, his nationality, the own religion he came to redeem. You do not want to follow a guy that goes through that road and says, now, be like me. You're like, whoa, no, I don't like being like you. You bless me. And no wonder we get this place in the Christian life where it doesn't seem to be working. We like to tattoo it on our arms. We like to have it on steeples. We like to wear it in earrings or around the neck. But that cross is an element of torture. And anybody in first century walking around with one of those hanging from their ear, psycho. Just leave them alone. And he goes, this is the symbol of our religion. It's a suffering Jesus. Okay, 2:23. That was the intro. I know. We got to be better on time. Parking issues must govern all. So here we go. Mark 2:23. This is one of those days I'm going to get in trouble, people. I'm claiming it right now. Don't care. And this is totally caffeine free. Have no idea what's going on. 23. We got to start. On the Sabbath. On the Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. Mm-hmm. And the Pharisees said to him, look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? Kind of don't get this. Some of you that have grown up around church, maybe you got some conception of this, but it's just, it's so weird because we don't have this in our culture. This Sabbath thing, and it's a biggie, folks. If you brushed up on your Ten Commandments lately or read them somewhere on a wall or wherever, I don't know if they're allowed to be up anymore, but if you've got them in your head, this is there. In fact, keep a finger right here. It's the only other place we're turning, Exodus. Whew, good, second book of the Bible. You don't have to flip a whole lot. Genesis and Exodus 20. It's where the Ten Commandments are listed. Might want to mark it. Put a little star on that corner just so you know. Oh, I finally found where these commandments are in this book because it's a big book. Exodus 20. I love my job. Exodus 20. You've got him starting out with the commandment saying, hey, there's one God. Don't have any other gods before me. Commandment number one. Number two, don't make any idols or graven images. Number three, don't misuse the name of the Lord your God. Now go to verse 8. Exodus 28. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Ooh, big words. Not, it sounds like it's severe. And here it goes. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. That's the Sabbath. It's one of the biggies. It's the commandments. It goes back to the very beginning of the second chapter in the entire Bible, Genesis 2. God made everything in 6 days. On the seventh day, it said he rested. He looked at everything he said and said, that's good. That's great. And now it's a time for rest. And God said from the very beginning, the pattern of history and creation, I need you to have this in your life. Strict, too. This isn't an option. It's like, oh, this is one of those weeks I probably could use a Sabbath. No, listen to what happens if you don't. Exodus 23 says this. For 6 years, not only 6 days in Sabbath, but then it says after 6 years, there's going to be a whole Sabbath year that you are to sow your fields and the harvest and the crops. But during the seventh year, let the lie land unplowed and unused. The poor among your people may get food from it. The wild animals may eat what they leave. Do the same with your vineyard and your olive grove. 6 days do your work, but on the seventh day do not work, so that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the slave born in your household and alien as well may be refreshed. The Sabbath was primarily for rest and relationships. Two things. It's for rest and relationships. That was it. From the very beginning, God said, I took one. If it was good enough for me, take one. 6 days work, seventh day, no work. In fact, this is good. 6 years, go ahead and work your fields. If you want to do your barley, your wheat, your corn, whatever, your livestock. But on the seventh year, I don't want you to plant anything on that field. I want you to keep it. I want you to keep it just empty. Don't touch anything to it. Whatever still grows up from the seeds remaining, let anybody gather and eat. It'll be a way of helping out the poor, the underprivileged. It'll be a way of helping out the alien, those immigrants in your land. That's going to be great. God also, some 6,000 whatever years before we even understood agriculture, understood the importance of letting land lie fallow. I was just saying, look, the nutrients, the soil needs to regenerate. And what a brilliant God this one was. And he goes, man, I need you to do it. For your donkeys, for your ox, for your slaves, for your servants, for your family. There's a day of no work. It was for rest and relationship. And then listen to this, Exodus 31:12. The Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites, you got to observe my Sabbaths. This will be a sign between me and you for all the generations to come, so that you may know that I am the Lord who makes you holy. Observe the Sabbath because it is holy to you. Anyone who desecrates it must be put to death. Whoever does any work on that day must be cut off from his people. Oh, that's severe. It's like, you know, I didn't do that much this week. It's harvest time. I got a field out. I'm just going to go do a half acre. And as soon as you pick up the plow, you're supposed to have rocks thrown on top of you. And go, maybe it was a bad idea. Maybe the guy in the field over goes, oh, shouldn't plow on the Sabbath. There's a death penalty with that one. Are you kidding me? I mean, this was huge for all Jewish traditions in Old Testament law. You got to understand that going into this. Because for rest and relationship, it basically meant two things. One, physical renewal. physical renewal. People, how many of you need physical renewal? We still need Sabbath today. It was their Saturday in first century then, because Christ rose from the dead on a Sunday. The early church then said, our Sabbath will now be a Sunday. We're going to be different from the Jewish traditions that we broke from. And from then on, their Sabbath became a Sunday. But same thing, it'll be a day of rest. It'll be a day of renewal. It'll be a day where you can't work your slaves. It'll be a day where you can't work your employees. Everyone has to have that day off. And it shouldn't be a day filled with nothing but yard work and from morning till evening. I know, some nudges. It's tough. I need that, though, in my life. There are times where my wife and I have built in, and because I work on weekends, we find different times where she just knows, hey, there's going to be a couple big gaps, especially Sunday afternoons on, from 1 o'clock to about 6 o'clock at my house. Don't ask to ever have Sunday dinner, to come over. Hey, we'd love to have you over after church. No, it's Sabbath. Get out of here. I love that day because sports are on. My work is click, 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 click. But today as a family, we just try to sit on the couch. We try to eat. We try to sit in the backyard. We just try to hang out. He said there's a physical renewal and people in our day of success-driven mentality. How much is said about margins in the workplace? And people are saying, man, it's career suicide if I throttle down. And yet now all the experts are saying, you want to be successful? Throttle down. Because we've proven over the last 30 years what workaholics end up and what we get out of it. By doing less, you're actually going to be able to get more out of people, employees, life, everything. Huh, he kind of knew what he was doing. It's for one, that physical renewal and that relationships basically means this, spiritual renewal. Spiritual renewal. The verse I read, he goes, let this be a commandment. Let this be a sign of the covenant for all of your generations. Let there be one day that reminds you this isn't about you. Let there be one day, God said, where you put aside your own desires and you focus on me. To remind you, you are loved, you are bought with a price, you are created, you are my chosen people in possession. But my fear is, the way you work and your mentality, if I don't set aside a day for that, it'll be days, weeks, months, years before that gets back into your head. So the Jewish month, every month, was 28 days, broken up into four by these Sabbaths. A time to set aside, stop working the beast of the field, stop working everybody in life, and just a time to rest and a time to focus on who God is. And God said, that's why I don't want you to violate it. I want to be an integral part of every week. The Sabbath just doesn't make you rest from the other 6 days of work. That Sabbath is what gives you what you need, big picture spiritually, for the next 6 days of God's agenda in your life. Okay, in 4 minutes, that was my entire take on Sabbath and probably, I don't know, 40 chapters if you want to read it on your own. Now understand the problem. When those laws were made some 4,000 years ago, and now you've got all the oral traditions on top of that, you have written down an oracle called the Mishnah. It is all the oral laws passed down. Don't work, be rested, focus on God. Great rule. Now it's like, well, what's work? You know how we get? I'm a farmer by trade, so if I take that day off and I just do some carpentry that I can sell, you know, make a little money on the side, it's not really my work. I mean, my work is farming. I'm just making knickknacks. And so now because there's people like me in the world, the priests have to come and say, look, idiot, we got to make new rules. This is what it means to work. You can't carry anything heavy with your hands. You can't carry anything on your back or on your shoulders. You can carry stuff on the back of your hand or you can carry stuff on the top of your foot. These are literal rules. The rules basically said, from David Guzik, that rabbis filled Judaism with elaborate rituals related to the Sabbath and observance of other laws. Ancient rabbis taught that on the Sabbath, a man couldn't carry something on his right hand or on his left hand, across his chest or on his shoulder, but you could carry something with the back of your hand, with your foot, with your elbow, or in your ear. Don't laugh at the law. Your hair, or in the hem of your skirt, or in your shoe or sandal. Or on the Sabbath, you were forbidden to tie any knot, except a woman could tie a knot in her girdle. So, if a bucket of water had to be raised from a well, you could not tie a rope to the bucket, but a woman could tie her girdle to the bucket. And this is what we're talking about. People, honest, this is oral tradition. Because guys like me always want to get along the law. So as far as I want to get around the law, they kept stretching it. Now you have the scene. Jesus already said, I'm not going to fit. Jesus already said, I'm going to tick you off because I'm going to come for anybody that wants to be changed. I don't care who they are, what their walk of life is. And you better be okay with that. But we're not. He goes, you're not in the program then. Jesus says, I'm not coming to bless your life. I'm coming to change it. And if you don't have an openness to be changed, then don't get the Jesus sticker on the bumper. And now, on the Sabbath, he walks to the field and he and the homies pick grain and they start eating it, which broke at least four rules. I mean, they're harvesting, they're reaping, they're winnowing, they're sowing, they're preparing a meal. Oh! And the Pharisees see this and they have a fit over granola. There's Jesus and the boys eating trail mix with their hands, and all heck is about to break loose. Why are your disciples doing four of the 39 laws we made up that you can't do on a Sabbath? They're breaking four in one mouthful. And I know you stop and go, who are these clowns? Are you kidding me? And yet today, I get there so easily. I've been in churches that split over grape juice or wine during communion. Big split. We have denominations that will never come back together because some had to go grape juice and some wanted to say wine. Because there were drums on stage. I remember the first time drums hit the stage in a Southern Baptist church I went to. We came into church, drums were on stage, 30 families left church. Drums were on stage. And of course, we all know they're Satan's instruments, so it made sense. Why don't your venues have any crosses in them? It's not church. Why don't you sing hymns? Why don't people dress more appropriately? You see the granola we have? Our life is filled with granola, people, and we make splits over it. And I think this is one of those times where Jesus just said, I won't fit your system. Let me show you. We're going granola hunting on the Sabbath. Just to turn up the heat a little bit. I don't care what he looked like, but I love the way this guy thought. I think he would make me incredibly uncomfortable to hang around. But I love reading them. Why? The question comes back. And I love his response. Jesus answered, have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? Okay. Now right there again, you're talking to Pharisees. Those have been brought up knowing the word inside and out. And it's not as big a book as we have. It was just Old Testament up at that point, not even all the books. And so they didn't have to know that much, but they knew David. Everyone knew David. It was the greatest hero in your generation according to your traditions. And so they're like, why are you guys breaking the Sabbath rule? And Jesus is all, hey, have you guys, don't you even know about David, what he didn't need? And the disciples have to be like, asking a Pharisee if they don't know about David? Come on. He goes, yeah, remember when he was in need? In the days of Abiathar, 26, the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for the priest to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Do you remember the story? If you want to jot it down, 1 Samuel 21, we won't go there. But Saul is king, and he has a son named Jonathan, who's David's best friend. And David said, you know what? I think your dad wants to kill me because he knows I'm supposed to be next king. And even though Jonathan should have said, let him kill you, that way I can really get king. I'm the king's son. Jonathan said, let me help you out. And he went and talked to his dad. And sure enough, dad wanted to kill David. So basically he came out and told David, run for your life. And David's running through the wilderness for his life. Comes across the tabernacle. There you have the Ark of God, Indiana Jones, gold box, little angels on top. There you have a little 3-foot table in front of it by 1.5 foot. Covered in gold, and there you have 12 loaves of bread called showbread. It's that weekly offering to God, representing his people and the tribes of Israel. It's there. No one touches it. At the end of that week, you bring up a new 12 loaves, and the priest and the priest only can eat the old 12 loaves. But Jesus says, don't you remember in 1 Samuel 21, David was hungry, he's in the wilderness, and he goes to the tabernacle, and the priests are like, David, what are you doing here? He goes, I'm running for my life. We need food. And they said, we don't have anything. But we got 12 Jesus loaves. No one's supposed to touch them or eat them but me, but you're starving and I run for your life, so of course you can have them. What are you doing on the Sabbath? You're breaking the rules. And Jesus goes, oh, I have precedent for breaking the rules. It's 1 Samuel 21. By the way, it's your book. And they sit there dumbfounded. You can tell because there's no response. And so then he says this. So then he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even on the Sabbath. I know those tricky sayings. Basically, breaking it down, you can write it this way. Man was not made to obey rules. Rules were made to help man. Jesus says, look, human need always will take precedent over your oral traditions. Are you kidding me? You're going to come over here and get upset about granola when I've got hungry men that are walking from point A to point B doing God's work, and you want to make a fight about granola? And Jesus says, I don't want to argue trail mix. What I want to tell you is man wasn't made for laws. Laws were made to help out men. It's, I got three climbers right now. And some of the best things to climb, of course, is furniture. And so they do that all day long. The five-year-old is getting in her head that she's not supposed to do it, but the four-year-old and the one-and-a-half-year-old race to see who can stand on top of the couch, because once you get on top of the couch, you can reach the blinds. And putting blinds in the room of an 18-month-old is just the silliest thing ever, but they're in every room of the house. So he'll grab the blinds and he'll rattle them and tear them, and the great big long ones in front of the sliding door, he'll pull them off, and I'm constantly taping and gluing, and they just don't fit anymore. And so when you close our blinds, there's big gaps in there, so they're always open. And so we have these rules. Don't get on top of the furniture. Don't grab the blinds. We did not have blinds and furniture, and then Amy and I sat around and realized we've got good furniture rules. We need to have some kids to apply these furniture rules. Because right now, we have rules about the blinds, and neither you or I are ripping them. We need to have some kids. And then the rules of furniture will come into play. And that's what Jesus is saying. He said, look, you've taken my religion and my law and my Sabbath, which was there for you spiritually to be renewed and physically to be renewed. And you've made it now about a trail mix war out here in the middle of nowhere. Is that what God intended? And by the way, I'm Lord of the Sabbath. Yeah, that went over real good. From the very beginning, man had one simple rule. Hey, the garden, yours, the animals, everything, it's paradise, it's free. There's one tree. It's knowledge of good and evil. It's the tree of free will. You will think you will be like God. In other words, you will now make decisions for your life independently from what God wants. Don't eat that fruit. That's it. But the moment we ate that fruit, the moment sin and the moment you and I constantly live in a life where I was always looked to say, how can I get around the law or the rule? God said, now I've got to put things in the way. But understand this. I know we've hit it before, so just briefly, that God's rules are either to protect or to provide for us. God's rules are either to protect or to provide for us. Never to make life hard. Never to take great things away. I know in my mind, I look at God's rules regarding sexuality or morality. I look at God's rules concerning how much money I should keep and give to Him. I look at God's rules as far as how I should treat others that I don't even know and have any business knowing. And I look at those rules and I say, God, if every one of those rules I did a little differently, I would have a much fuller life. And He goes, Chris, I know that. Every rule I have given you, every law is there to protect you from getting into a place or falling into a trap or a hole that's going to kill you. Or to provide for you a better way to live, to give you a fuller, abundant life. Jesus says, that's why I've come. But if you've gone into Christianity, you've made it all about rules that suck all the joy from life. And He goes, that's not it. That's not it. And I love the way He put it. The Sabbath was not made for man. Or the Sabbath was made for man. Not man for the Sabbath. There is a law here that's supposed to help people. And after thousands of years, look what you've made it. It's not making life better for you. This has got to really sting the religious leaders. Our last few little verses and sections and paragraphs or pericopes have all been used to show I'm going to go contrary to what you call religion. So if you've ticked off the religious leaders, where should you go? That's right, church. And He does. I love the guts of this guy. Chapter 3 simply starts like this. Another time, he went into the synagogue. It is the headquarters of those who now hate you. You have ticked them off. For those that want to come to religion so that my life will be blessed, so that Jesus works for me, and that I can have a bunch of rules just to prove I'm better than all the other sinners out there. Jesus says, I don't play any of those games. And so if you're in that camp, either today or then, of course you're feeling a little uncomfortable and ticked off. So where does he go? He goes in the synagogue. I love how calculated this guy is. I love how he's driving this home. I love, in some sense, he is a wild man. He will not break God's rules, and he will not tell his followers to break God's rules. But he will break man's rules for a greater need. And he will do whatever he needs to do, rebelling against cultural and society and any religious forms or rituals to tear this thing apart and to bring it back to what it was supposed to be. And if that means going back into the place where you have just made enemies, he said, I will walk freely. And look what happens when you get there. It's like showdown. You know the music's there. It's like, doo-doo-doo-doo, wah-wah-wah. And you hear sandals clicking on the marbles, the synagogue doors. And the 12 kind of come in and just quickly take seats on the wall. Like, I might still be a fisherman. I'm not sure. Let's see what happens with this one. And a man was there with a shriveled hand. Verse 2. And some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Okay, side note. If you really want to follow Christ, know for a fact that there will be people there in your life who simply want to make things difficult and accuse you. I don't think there's any way around that. You want to take a stand in a family that doesn't know Christ, I guarantee you there will be people there who want to bring you down and tear you down. You want to take a stand for Christ in a workplace where there's resentment to that, I guarantee you there will be people there who are always looking for a place to bring you down. If they did constantly follow around Jesus' life, looking for ways to trap him or accuse him, and we're supposed to follow him, it's probably going to be there, folks. Unless our tattoo is of a recliner. Because if we serve a God that simply wants to bless us, then we don't want to make waves in our own life. And we're willing to take the truth far enough where it's okay for me, but not far enough where it's going to get difficult. And if that's the extent of our Christian life, then we might not have to face ridicule. But I'm not sure if that's the program he was selling. And they watched closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. And he knows it. There's a book. It's not in the canon of Scripture. We've only got a few parchments from it. It's called the Gospel of Hebrews. It has some oral traditions that are early 2nd century that say this man was a stonesmith. He worked with his hands and a large rock had crushed him years before. This wasn't something that he was born with, but it was something that took away his livelihood. The story goes, he saw Jesus, had heard enough stories where he came up and said, would you help me? Because he didn't want to spend life as a beggar. Don't know if that's fact or not. I don't consider that God's scripture, but it's a great story from 2nd century. For whatever reason, the guy's there with the shriveled hand. And the synagogue leaders are up front because they're always up front. They have long robes. They have the front row seats because it's their job to make sure no one does church wrong. Everyone does church right. And Jesus knows. And he knows the moment he walked in and all the eyes looked at him, that the eyes will constantly look at him. And when this man comes up, I love the scene. Jesus simply says, stand up in front of everyone. I don't know why. Maybe because this guy would hide his hand. Maybe because it's behind his robe, behind his back, and Jesus wanted everyone. Maybe the last plea, can church really be a place where you can stand with your problems and your failures and your messed up life and be accepted? Can church be the one place you can walk forward and say, here was my choices, or here's what happened to me, and I am broken? And can it please be the one place where you can still be accepted? Maybe it was his place and his plead to say, please, can you just look at the man, stop accusing me, and everyone will see something's got to be done. But no. And then Jesus asked them, so what's lawful on the Sabbath? To do good or to do evil? Check. I know you're trying to accuse me. And everyone sees his hand. and to the crowd, who doesn't get the front row seats, what's good on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil? Well, you can't answer that question. If you say, well, of course, to do good, then you got to heal the guy. But no religious leader is going to go, to do evil should be good on the... Oh, shut up. I'm done. I'm out of here. So there's no answer. And so then he pushes it further. To save a life or to kill it. Is someone thinking about killing the man? Not the man with the shriveled hand. But the man who has now stopped the ritual service, there's thoughts of killing. And he knows it. I want to save this man's livelihood and this man's life. Is that better to do in church or to think about killing me for doing it? What is this place about? And still no answer. Because they can't answer that one without giving him the freedom to do what he's about to do. In these verses, verse 5 is difficult. But he looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. This is what makes me uncomfortable about this rabbi. Because knowing who I am and my thoughts and my hearts as closely as he does, do I really want to go skipping around with the halo-wearing guy? Or what in my life would he look at and say, Chris, I see the religious games. I see the rituals. But what about your heart? What is it you're supposed to do for others? And he becomes angry and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. This is what you've made, church. And he says to the man, stretch out your hand. And he stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. And then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. I wonder if I would, too. He could have avoided it. You know that, right? The guy comes up, oh, can you heal my hand? He's like, ooh, it's the Sabbath. See me at 6:01 when it ends. Or tomorrow, I'll be open. I'll be here all week. Come on back. Oh, and you know how happy the guy would have been. He's lived with it for I don't know how many months, years, maybe decades. The man would have been ecstatic. He would have gone home telling his family, Jesus told me to come back tomorrow because, of course, it's the Sabbath. He couldn't heal. And yet tomorrow my hand will be restored. They would have started the party that night. The guy wouldn't have slept at all. He would have come dragging in the morning. The hand would have been restored. Ta-da! Jesus, think a little next time. Yeah, because I know how to get around the conflict. And Jesus goes, no, I'm going to make a stand. What is the Sabbath about? Rituals or meeting needs? What is it about? And because he looked at the hearts of those who filled the temple, and especially the front rows, and realized they are far more concerned in rituals and doing church and Christianity right than getting into situations that might be messy and costly, he became angry and disturbed. A pretty powerful sentence for Jesus. I think the disciples knew it. I think they saw that little vein on his forehead. And they're like, oh, give him room. See, to do with this section and then just taking it home. And Jesus saying, well, I guess if you have a need, you should break the rules and laws. Well, understand this. When it comes to breaking the rules, there is a huge difference between your needs and your wants. Huge difference. That's not what he's saying. Hey, if you got something you want to do in life and something's in your way, and as long as it's a good idea or a great need, and break the rules. Follow Jesus. Break the rules. See you guys next week. No, that's not what he's saying. That's not what he's doing at all. It's not because your kid needs to be in a better school that you lie about your address. He says, no, that's not it. It's not that you break the government rules on your taxes or your forms because they don't actually know that extra income is there and you can get away with it. And after all, you know how much financial need you could get this time of year. Jesus says, no, that's not it. I'm not talking about your wants. I'm talking about human needs. And I'm talking about making sure that this Christianity, what we call it, if nothing else, is about meeting those needs. On the third child, where Amy tells me, and as we're timing contractions, and it's like, I don't know, 3 a.m., and she's like, it's time to go. And we know it's time to go, because we've had a couple kids, you know? Because the first time, she's like, oh, I think I'm going to deliver. And I'm like, let's go to the hospital. And we go walking up, and we're holding hands, and we go, hey, my wife's about to have a baby. And they're all, get out of here. And I'm like, oh, no, really? And they're like, go. And we're like, how rude. Well, about 8 hours later, when she can only walk 20 feet, and then she holds onto my neck and hangs on me going, I'm like, oh, this is what they were waiting for. And we get back to the window, and there's another couple in front of us holding hands going, hey, this is our first kid. We're about to... I'm like, move out of the way. My wife's the one leaning on the bulletin board. Get a bed. And so we knew that when the third came, we didn't rush to the hospital just because there were pains. We waited until, and I'm like, okay, we're going. Don't hold it against me. But at 3 a.m. on the way to that hospital in Tri-City, I did not come to any complete stops at the red signs. I might have done slightly over the speed limit. Watching traffic, coming up the intersections, making sure good. But I knew there is a need right now that takes precedent over my complete stop at 3 a.m. in the morning. Okay? And any cop that comes up, I'd have, look at her. And he'd be like, woo, follow me. And I'm like, we're going. There's something inside of me, too, that night that was hoping I'd get pulled over because then I got a good excuse and I can use it, and I never used it. Any other guy? I was hoping. I'm like, someone pulled me. Oh, I got an excuse, but it didn't happen. I get that. That's what Jesus is saying. He goes, no, I'm not breaking any of God's commands. I'm breaking rules that we have set up, and there is a need, a greater need involved. I think you can put it this way. If we are not meeting needs, then we're not following Christ. And he came to church and said, congratulations, you sang two songs standing up, two songs sitting down, one song standing up, and you had your message. You treat each other better in the parking lots than you usually do on the freeway, so that's a good job. You get points for that. Congratulations, he said, you've done religion well. Would he look at our lives, our hearts, our finances, the other 6 days, and say, what are you doing about meeting needs? Because you have made this exactly what I have come to abolish and say, I won't play that game. It's why the teacher of the law came up and said, what's the greatest commandments? And he said, love God and love others. That's it. That's it. He didn't say anything about reading your Bible or quiet time or going to church or evangelism or being in a growth group. Those are amazing things, but if that's how you classify you're a Christian, he said, great, they're rituals. Where are you meeting needs? You cannot read stories of Jesus without finding him meeting needs. And at the end, all he did was plead, do as I do, love as I love. John 13:35, they will know you are my disciples by the way you love. Not perfect attendance, by the way you love. And if there's one thing today, if we had a glimpse of Jesus here, I don't know what he would look like. I don't care. But I think his heart would remain the same. Continue, people, to be a church that realizes you're all sick. And you come and every week say, God, change me. Just show me something that needs to be changed and change me. Don't bless me. Change me. To realize my laws are there to protect and to provide for you, not to take anything away. And to love others. And when you're done with that, love others. And when you're done with that, love others. And when you get tired of doing that, then start loving others. That was our whole First John series. You love the God you haven't seen, and yet you're not loving others. John said you're liars. Harsh words from a guy that walked with Jesus. But a guy that had it drilled into his head over and over. This now is a sign of my followers. It will be a cross, not a recliner. It's a suffering Messiah. It's a suffering people for the sake of others. No wonder they wanted to kill him. I love him to death. Man, I get jazzed up reading them. I don't know how much I would like hanging out with him. Because it seemed that his goal was to make everyone uncomfortable. If you're sinning, it's a sin. He said, I'm going to call it. You got to change and leave it. I'll accept you, but I'm not going to say it's okay. And if you're playing church to be righteous and make yourself feel good, I'm not going to be a part of it. From both extremes and in the middle, he had a call to radical change. Back to the heart of God. Not to rules. So God, may we continue to be a place that don't go and sign up for growth groups right now simply so we do a ritual, but realize that is another place where we can be with others, where we can be changed, where we can take this deeper, where we can be molded, and where we can love others. May this continue to be a place that does service projects, not for the sake of claiming hundreds of projects, but for the sake of showing other people your love. And may this be a place that we come, regardless of our venue or time, for a Sabbath, not so that we can simply be healed, but so we can change our next 6 days and have your power and strength, not just to do our life, but to love someone else's. God, continue to use this place to change us, to change our world. In your name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed today's study from God's Word. Pastor Chris will return in a moment with some final comments. For more information, or if you'd like additional copies, please contact us at area code 760-724-6700. Our mailing address is North Coast Church, 1132 North Melrose Drive, Vista, California, 92083. Or visit our website at www.northcoastchurch.com. Now here's Pastor Chris.
Well, congratulations. You have successfully fulfilled all the requirements of this religious ritual. However, real worship that God accepts is simply meeting the needs of others. So this ritual time is officially over. Your real worship starts right now for the next 6 days.